Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning, good evening, good afternoon to all my blessed beloveds out there in Radio Land. You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty, and I am Rusty. I'm trying out a new headset, and I went to push it in my ear a little further and ended up hanging up on myself 11 seconds before going on air. So thank goodness for speedy and swift fingers that allow me to do things a little faster than I am accustomed to do. Today is Humpity Hump Day. It's a rainy day. It's school vacation here, so I've had a house full of children for, most of the week, and it's been fun. We were able to celebrate Earth Day yesterday at the Children's Museum and played with worms and dirt and roly-polies and got to play with recycling and make things out of recycling. It was a lot of fun. If you're not on my Facebook now, feel free. Tune in. This is how you find out where I am and what I'm doing and how I'm doing and what kinds of crazy adventures I'm on. So it's facebook.com/celiacroads. Yes, because I'm a celiac and I'm always walking the road. It's an adventure. It's a journey. And life is what it is. Today, I'm really pleased to have Reef Van Rijge, founder of The Daily Way Home. He has an incredible story, and I think what he's done with himself and his life purpose and how he's inspiring other people, it's going to be a great show. So we will welcome him on in a minute. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to give me a call or come into the chat room and send me little chat messages. I love it when you guys send me flowers. That makes me feel special. The number here is 347-205-9443. And next month, we have a huge lineup of some amazing guests, so make sure you sign up for the newsletter. The newsletter is on my website. It's also my blog that I do every other week now. I'm not consistent enough to say that it's weekly. But I uploaded another one today, and it's going to be fun. So comments, feedback, and, of course, the newsletter. You need to sign up so that you know where I am. And, of course, I'm still looking for sponsors for this show. We have well over 500 guests that would like to be on the show. I only have Sunday nights and Wednesdays at this time. I'd like more, but in order to make more, we have to have sponsors. So ping me either on Twitter or Facebook or on my website, and let's talk about sponsorship. It's going to be very, very exciting. Lots going on, lots to do, and I'm going to waste no more time. Allergies are kicking in. I'm so sorry, Reef. How are you, my friend?
Hey, Rusty. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Awesome. Yeah, no, just doing a radio check. Yeah, I'm great. And thank you. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I love what you do. And hey, anyone else that's in the kind of personal growth kind of holding space for what's really important in life is I commend. So hello and good morning and good afternoon to you, my fellow spiritual traveler.
And good morning, good afternoon, my friends, and big virtual hugs to you. I have to apologize. There's a lot of pollen in New England, and all of a sudden my throat has kind of become this horrible scratchy thing. So I'm going to leave today to you to do most of the talking and relieve my voice. I'm sure you won't mind.
No, I'm one of those personality types. You have to turn the tap off for me. So. I'll just say, you stop me when you need to.
No problem. And I do have to say that I got a text from you at 3 o'clock this morning. I don't know how late you stay up, but us old ladies don't stay up that late. I was laughing. I'm
well,
like, why did you text me at 3 o'clock in the morning? I'm that excited.
I was just lying in my bed, sort of going over, the things I'd like to kind of touch on, during this interview. And I do live in Vancouver, Canada. And, of course, we're Pacific time, so, you know,
right.
Yes, we're 3 hours behind you. So it certainly wasn't 3 o'clock in the morning my time. But, you know, I've got to admit, my father called me a night pilot ever since I was a little kid. And
yeah.
You know, it's funny how, you know, isn't it weird how we're just wired? So I think certain people, you hear people are morning people and other people are, you know, night people. I do sort of come alive later in the day and in the evening. I'd love to be a morning person, but I'm still trying to figure it out, to be in all honesty.
You know, and it's, I think we go through phases. Our bodies and our minds and our lives change so much and so rapidly. I can tell you, in college and high school, I was the night owl. And now 9 o'clock rolls around and I'm yawning. I'm in my pajamas. I'm ready. But I get up ridiculously early in the morning. So, and without an alarm, I just get up. I'm like, hello, I'm awake, and 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. And I'm going, I would really like to go back to sleep. So because, you know, as you know, changes and phases that we go through in life, I think physiologically, we also have some major changes that we go through.
You know, Rusty, as soon as you said that, you know, my coach hat just came on and I went, that really resonated because, you know, the only permanent thing in life is change. And if
correct.
we're truly open-minded and we have a childlike mind and an enthusiasm, we have to change. And if we're not changing, we're actually dying. So I love what you just said, and I'm totally open to becoming a morning person. I'm not going to force it, but I've always kind of, you know, these people that get up in the morning and watch the sunrise and, you know, jump out of bed, I always, you know, think, how the heck do you do that, you know? But yeah, I love what you said about change, and it's, you know, if we're truly open to stuff, that's when life becomes exciting and life becomes, you know, a continual tapestry, a continual painting that's never complete, a masterpiece that's, you know, to be continued. And you know, for me, I think that's what life's about. If I didn't have that, if I didn't have that certain amount of uncertainty, I don't think there'd, you know, be a reason to be around. And I think that's, you know, so much about personal growth as well is, for me, it was finally understanding that, guess what? I'm never going to arrive. It doesn't happen, you know? And I had this, you know, I had this false notion as a younger person that I'd reach nirvana, you know? As a young kid, I put a backpack on when I was like 21 years old, and I bought a one-way ticket to India, you know?
You're the third person this week I've talked to that's done that.
Oh, I mean, I put, you know, to add to that piece, I grew up in South Africa. So, you know, when I was 21, that was a long, long time ago. And in those days, you know, South Africa was an apartheid regime, you know. So here was this white kid who grew up in a, you know, segregated country who decided to buy a one-way ticket to India. And people just looked at me and shook their heads and went, what? But, you know, I just had I had such a hunger and a zest for spiritual growth, you know, and I just knew that India, I just had this draw to India as this place that was the ground zero of spirituality, you know, the Vedic writings are amongst the oldest, you know, recorded scripture or writings in the world, and I mean, if you go into that culture, they really have such a strong basis in spirituality. Well, I mean, while we as Europeans were running around in skins as Vikings hacking each other to pieces, in India, they were, you know, enlightened and spiritual and creating incredible writings and philosophies and so on. So, yeah.
Well,
so
I think both cultures had their demons. You know, there's definitely things that could be said about all cultures in regards to not being as compassionate or caring or open-minded or lacking the ability, like, you know, I know that there's definitely a caste system that you have to contend with in India, and that's very difficult for people. I wonder how it was for you going through and seeing some kind of segregation, you know, Africa and then to India with the caste system. How was that perception-wise? Did that make you more compassionate, do you think?
Wow, what an awesome question. Well, you know, that's a really powerful question. Part of the whole reason. Yeah, no, I love. It thought, you know, it actually made me a little emotional. excuse me. Wow. Yeah, because it goes so much deeper than, you know, the surface level of that question. It's actually why I do what I do, you know. Growing up in apartheid. Well, here's the thing, you know, as a child, you end up brought into the world, and when you're born magnificent. There's nothing wrong with you. You're completely pure and open and ready. And then it's through the system of being taught by our parents, teachers, religion, community, society, governments, that we begin to learn the stuff that's often not based in reality. So being, you know, born into a South African family, certainly, you know, from a very young age, this was just how life was. You know, we had a black maid, we had a black man who worked in the garden, we had servants' quarters. I never made my bed through my whole career as a child. It was made for me. And so, you know, when you're brought up in that circumstance, and you know, unless you're a young person who's really provoked to think for yourself, it just becomes a way of life. But, you know, inherently, Rusty, I always knew that, you know, all was not well in Kansas. You know, there was something, you know, something didn't gel with what was going on. And so
I think that's a perfect segue to kind of talk about the reasons why you do what you do and what it is that you do, because I've been privileged enough to be able to stalk you on the internet, and I also wanted to thank you for the shout out on your blog today. I was able to read that and I was like, oh, that's so sweet. So thank you for that. So who are you and what do you do? Because you and I could talk for hours. Like, I already have that feeling.
Yes. I told you, you're going to have to cat herd me on this call a little bit. But, wow, okay, some awesome questions. And first of all, thank you for the shout-out. But, you know, I thank you. I mean, I'm so grateful to be on your show. And any chance that I get to talk about my passion and share my passion is just a privilege. So, you know, I point that back at you. Hello, kids. Welcome to the interview.
I know. Unfortunately, we have school vacation, and I apologize, but my daughter has all of her buddies over. I'm like, all right, you guys have to try to be quiet for 45 minutes, but the boys are having anxiety that they're outnumbered. So I'm going to mute you. You're going to continue to tell us who you are and what you do.
Awesome. So, yeah, who am I? I love that question. Well, you know, who I am really, I'm a spiritual being who's having a human experience. And it's nuts and bolts is as simple as that. I'm a person who's become extremely passionate about pursuing my own purpose and truth. And I'm a person who's passionate about sharing the birthright of what I call inner divinity and the alignment to source, universe, higher power, God, whatever works for you. I like to keep it neutral because different people have different beliefs, but it's the inheritance of every human being to be able to connect back to their birthright of alignment and then their birthright of purpose. So
and
I can
yours,
tell you
yours
also,
was a little challenging. As I was reading your story, you had a tough go at connecting back to your source.
Well, yeah, I mean, thanks for, you know, doing all the research on me. It's pretty impressive that you've spent the time. But, you know, we all have story, Rusty, every one of us. And everyone's story is slightly different. You know, my story is no more dramatic or, you know, tough than anyone else's story. I've realized that now. And I quite often, you know, I've gone so beyond my story that it's almost difficult to sort of regurgitate because I regurgitated that for so long. But in a nutshell, I grew up. I was born into a family in South Africa. My father was studying to become a religious minister at the time, and he was an alcoholic since the day I since the day I was born, my mom told me that he was already a heavy drinker. I had a lot of scars and wounds from my father and the absence, absence of him in my life. And then very early on in my life, I started to realize that I had this sexuality question going on, and I was, it happened, it started at a very young age, but I was, definitely felt more comfortable with the opposite sex. That was a completely no-no in my family's upbringing, in my family's religion, and certainly in South Africa back in the 60s. I mean, it just didn't exist. So I felt incredibly ostracized as a younger child. Years and years later, I started numbing my pain with alcohol myself. I mean, I had a perfect role model. I looked up to my father, and, to become a man, it seemed like you had to, drink. So what I started doing at a very, very young age was drinking. I can remember by 13, 14 years old, coming home rolling, inebriated and passing out in the garden outside my house and waking up in the rain in the morning. It was a pretty messy upbringing. But, like a lot of dysfunctional homes that are like this, everything was just swept under the carpet. I think really my biggest demons were my sexual demons. They were deep. They went to a very, very deep level. And as I grew older, I started, denying who I was. And when we deny and repress who we are, it comes out sideways. And I did some, really dark, shitty things to myself, to other people. It was just on the outside, I always, had this persona of happiness, and I was very charismatic in my life. I was head prefect of my school in South Africa, which is a really big deal. I shone in so many ways. People would look to me and say, wow, seems like you have everything. You have this golden spoon and everything lands in your lap. And, on one side, there was that part of me, but honestly, Rusty, this other part of me was like this big frickin', sword that was just, stabbing me through my soul, which I sort of kept inside. So years and years later.
Do you feel that at that time period, I think we're walking dichotomies. We're walking hypocrites in so many ways. And I just want to kind of dig a little deeper into this part of the story, because it's going to resonate with other people that are listening. So just to recap, you are in a South African community. You're in a very strict religious setting. So you already have segregation not only on color, but segregation on gender, because your mother was very good with helping your father, hide his issue. And so you already have this role segregation. You're fighting your own internal attractions to the same sex at a time period where not only in the country, but also at a time period where it was such a taboo. It was crazy. So I could perfectly understand how you had to develop this persona to really hide what you felt was kind of a dark side. It really wasn't, but at the time, that's what you were taught environmentally. So how did you work through that, aside from the alcoholism, the early on drinking? What else did you do to cope through that time period?
Wow, so it's really deep questions. And again, I want to get through this because it's just story, and when we buy into our story and we allow it to define who we are, that's when chaos happens in our lives, and we get out of connection to, what our authentic real selves are and what our real purpose is. But to answer your question, there was a part of my life that I just put on hold. I had this deep spiritual quest. I knew that there was even more hurt, I think, but I wasn't sure what it was. But I had this outward persona of happiness, and I always was the loudest laugher in the party, and I was the biggest party animal, and And certainly I used to numb my pain. And when initially what I used to numb my pain was alcohol. That was definitely my weapon of choice. And as I grew older and I left South Africa, I'd certainly get involved in really dysfunctional work situations where I'd work 18, 19, 20 hours a day. And that certainly, was another way of – it's an addiction. It's like there's a 12-step program for it. It's called a work addiction. And it's a way of, again, another coping mechanism to avoid going through the pain and the feelings that you need to go through so that you can come out on the other side and start to live a life of purpose. This is really personal. But, yeah, as you called me to action here, I'm going to say it. I mean, I use sex as a coping mechanism. It's a really powerful part of being human. And if you use it inappropriately or you use it as a distraction, it can become very much a toxic, out of alignment thing. And I certainly use sex inappropriately as a way of distracting myself from who I was. And it was another of the many 12-step programs that eventually I found myself gravitating towards to sort of dig myself out of where I was in. But the funny thing is, with alcohol, about 4 years ago, it was on the 20th of August, 2010, I woke up one morning and I had this amazing out-of-body experience, a chat with the universe. It was bizarre, and I woke up, and it was like, drinking is not your problem, it's your father's. And as cerebral and weird as that sounds, that day I stopped drinking, and I've never, ever had an issue. And then the last 4 years, it just like left my world, and I realized that so much of what I'd done was just following patterns of my past and my family, and it really wasn't, it really wasn't my issue. I wasn't. It was just a coping mechanism that I'd learned to use to sort of numb my pain.
And isn't so I that interesting away from... when you finally come to that place in your life where you go, wow, I'm just repeating history. I'm simply repeating the environment that I work so hard to get away from. And that's where the academy of being human really comes in, because we strive. I know a lot of people that, I'm never going to smoke. My dad died of cancer, blah, blah, blah. And then 20 years later, you find them smoking and you're like, wait.
Yeah.
And it's fine. I mean, I quit a year ago. But so it's not a judgment statement. It's just pointing out a very simple dichotomy that we live in, because we repeat our behaviors. I mean, especially
Absolutely.
When you're in an abusive family, when you spend your childhood in an abusive pattern, it's very difficult to break those patterns. Wow. I mean, 4 years ago, you finally realized that you were just still holding on to your dad's story. That's pretty intense.
Well, thank you. Yeah, but I mean, this is why I'm so passionate about what I do, because really, Rusty, 4 years ago in my life, I hit surrender point. And it was such a deep surrender point that either everything had to change, or I really, I was really feeling like I had to check out. I really felt like there was no reason to be around. I know that's pretty dramatic, but I think more people than are willing to admit that go through feelings like that at some point in their life. And I certainly did. I certainly did. And, when I came out of it, I went, oh my gosh, I'm still here. I feel like I've been gripped by this story and I've repeated the chaos in my own life for so long. And I kind of went, what do I want to do with this going forward? How do I want to serve? How do I want to make a difference? How can my life, make some sort of difference for the rest of the time that I have on earth? And
I think we have to go through our story, and we have to feel it, and we have to embrace it, and we have to learn it, and we have to cry, and we have to scream, and we have to, feel like our chest is bursting out with grief, because we do grief, we do sadness, we do love, we do these things, these emotions, so beautifully and well. And now you're at this pivotal place where you're able to step aside and say, okay, I've done these emotions, and now I'm applying it to the daily way home, which is beautiful.
Well,
so
thank you.
A little bit about the daily way home, and I want everybody to go out to thedailywayhome.com. So as he talks, you can learn more about his personal story, which is beautiful. But talk to us about the Daily Way Home.
Cool. I mean, if I can, before I get there, I really feel like I want to, you know, we've gone through all the darkness and the struggle here, but I just want to say, before segueing into that, is that, you know, eventually I got to a place in meditation, guided through 12-step, which was, of all things, which I would never have expected. And during those meditations at night, you know, I'd just go to a place that was in nature that, and get quiet, go to a place in nature that really resonated for me. For me, it was this beautiful cabin high up in the Alps, in the Southern Alps in New Zealand. And it took me weeks of meditation every night to get to this place. It was a long journey. But as I got to this cabin, I felt this light just pouring out of this door. And it was completely overwhelming. I'd never felt so much love and power coming out of a, you know, it was unbearable. And it was, I couldn't open the door, but, you know, I don't want to drag the story on for too long, but eventually I could open the door, and this love that just came out of me was something like I'd never felt in my life. And there was a big fire and a sofa, and there was a person, a man, sitting facing the fire, not facing me. And eventually, over nights of meditation, I managed to draw closer to this person. And then it seemed like day, you know, nights of meditation before I could muster the courage to sit next to this person. And we couldn't look at each other. It was just too overwhelming. And then eventually this person turned to me, and it was just this powerful, beautiful, it was a man, but it was just an ageless, timeless entity. It represented source, universe, higher power, God, for the first time in my life. And I looked at this entity, and this entity looked at me, and I just started crying, and I said, oh my God, where have you been all this time? And this entity, you know, this force turned and looked at me and said, I've been here all this time. I've been waiting for you to come home. Bam! Bam, bam, bam. And for the first time in my life, I went, oh my God. You know, I've been rushing around in this chaos and, you know, chasing happiness outside of myself, trying to overcome my story. And here it was all that time was this, you know, just come home, I'm waiting for you. And that was the beginning
That's
of the
terrific.
End. And that is yeah. why that is why my blog is called The Daily Way Home, because I suddenly went, oh my God, there is life beyond the external. There is the true answer is within. You know, the within creates the world without. Happiness comes from within, not without. You know, striving for external goalposts are the goal. When we get there, the goalposts move, and happiness in the now is the success for the future. So, you know, I always go back to that story. I'm human, you know. I get, you know, like anyone, I have, you know, get pressures of the external. And sorry, can you hear me? I've got a beep coming in, and I'll just
yeah.
have to ignore that.
Yeah. That's okay. I've got kids
so,
running
so,
in and
know,
out, so we're good. You
okay,
beep,
okay,
I'll have kids screaming. It's life.
Okay.
You
okay,
hear
so
it live here.
So we're equal, right?
Yes, exactly.
You know,
we're both experiencing life as life wants to have us experience it.
Awesome. So eventually, you know, I was in, you know, at this time I was in 12-step programs, I was in therapy, and slowly, you know, I found a coach. And I coached with this amazing coach for 6 months. And my coach knocked everything that I was doing out of the water, knocked my therapy out of the water, knocked everything. It was the perfect thing that took me to the next step of my journey. I couldn't go to therapy anymore. I mean, we discovered through that therapy, and it's a pretty dark, deep story, but during therapy, I realized that I was abused as a child sexually myself by a family member. And it, when that came out, it just, I couldn't, you know, I was in bed for 3 days. I couldn't talk. But once that came out, all my stories slotted into the place. I realized why I had done what I'd done my whole life. I realized everything sort of slotted into place. And with that information, I could now, you know, sort of move forward. And the reason that I wanted to say this before talking about the Daily Way Home is that I truly believe now that everything that happened to me was completely necessary to drive me towards what I'm doing now in my life. So yeah. there will come a time, you know, as dark or as painful as your story is, there will come a time in your life when you will turn around and you'll bless it. And you'll go, wow, perhaps that was all just a massive act of grace that brought me to this place and nothing else in my case, because I'm such a headstrong guy. I'm so, you know, I take risks. I do crazy things. I've had such an unusual life, you know. I live outside the box. I don't think anything as dramatic and painful as what I went through would have guided me to coming home to myself and to an understanding of purpose and meaning. So the Daily Way Home is it's my passion. I think because of everything that I've been through, I'm passionate about, you know, holding space for others to see that they don't have to be driven by story, that they don't have to, you know, live lives of quiet desperation tethered to a wireless drip feed of mind-numbing irrelevance. It's not why we were born. We were born perfect. We were born completely connected to the universe and everything that's out there. When that Big Bang happened 14 billion years ago, Rusty, you and I were in it. We're not some random mistake that just happened on the Earth, you know, in 2013.
I don't know. The last text message I got from God, he said something completely different. So I'm gonna put you to task on that one.
Sorry, could you repeat that again? I didn't hear that.
I said the last text message that I got from God says something a little different.
Oh, really?
I'm just being silly.
Okay, well. You know, and that's, you know, that, I really am passionate about that now. When I look in the night sky and I see those stars, before I used to go, wow, that's so beautiful. Yeah, but now I go, wow, that's so beautiful, and I'm part of it. You know, the blood that's running through my veins is the same material that was in the Big Bang. I'm part of it. I'm part of the cosmos. I'm not part of chaos. I'm part of that harmonious design.
If we pull it back a little bit for those who are listening, again, we have over 200,000 people internationally listening to us, and not everybody can fully understand the concept that you're eloquently describing. Scientifically, we call it quantum physics now, which is something that is an extraordinary revelation of the science behind what you're referring to, being connected, being part of, and how we really are stardust, so to speak.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's very legitimate, and the science is there to prove it. So it's not just this new agey, culty type thing that some people want to deem it as. It literally, legitimately has a scientific molecular value that we are very much interconnected. And even more so, we're interconnected on an electrical charge, which is also quite fascinating. But I want to pull you back a little bit because we're halfway through the show, and this is where you get to shamelessly market yourself, tell us where we can find you, and then we're going to go to a quick commercial break and come back on, and I really want to delve into your passion. So shamelessly promote yourself.
Awesome. So, yeah, what I do is I coach. And I'm passionate about serving people. Those people who work with me will no doubt attest that, you know, once I work with someone, we end up loving each other. And I will hold space till for those of you that don't love yourself, I will stick with you every inch of the way until you're suffocating with self-love. So check out my webpage. It's www.thedailywayhome.com. If you, I'd love to work with you. I will never turn away anyone for any reason. You know, what you want wants you. So if you're ready to sort of move into a place into your life that you're feeling like you're not following authentic purpose, if you feel like you're, you know, in a life that's kind of outside of yourself, and that you could, you know, sort of align more to purpose and the reason for your existence, I would love to hold space for you to dig deeply and fearlessly into that. So you can also email me at info@thedailywayhome.com. Just let me know that you're interested in coaching, and I will send you a detailed email of how we can move forward. I'd be happy even to have like a half hour free coaching session to see if we're a good fit. I must say to date, I've never had anyone who approached me that hasn't worked out. And again, I just want to leave you with saying that this, I'm passionate about this. It's the reason for my life. And when I'm doing it, time stops. So I pour that passion into my clients, and I get a great, great sense of purpose and a great sense of accomplishment working with people. And you'll feel that when you work with me. And in 6 months, I will say that you won't be able to recognize yourself. It's just the way it is when you know. Yeah. When you tap
we're gonna tap into that a little bit after our commercial break. If you want to be the sponsor here on Living and Thriving with Rusty, this is the approximate time frame in which you would have your commercial. So hold on one moment.
Tune in weekly to Living and Thriving with Rusty, Inspiration on Tap. Rusty explores topics related to mind, body, and soul. For more information, go to her site at rustymcdonald.com. Not McDonald like the farmer, or certainly not like the fast food. Rusty McDonald, just what the doctor ordered. Listen to Living and Thriving with Rusty, Inspiration on Tap. Tune in weekly to Living and Thriving with Rusty, life coach, radio talk show host, single mom, and blogger.
Hey, I'm still not a happy meal, but I am here, and I'm happy to leave. Here, it's Wednesday, humpity hump day. Yes, dare I say it. I said hump day. I did. I said it. Naughty me. And it is the end of the month. Can you believe it? These days are flying on fast and crazy and amazing. I just don't even know what to do with myself anymore. I think we have one more Wednesday show and one more Sunday show, and we're already in May. Can you believe that? Today, I am thrilled to have my new friend, Rief van Rij, founder of The Daily Way Home, and I'm probably killing his name. He'll yell at me later, I'm sure. And he has this beautiful, beautiful personal story and a beautiful opening to why he does what he does and why he wants to help you, motivate you, inspire you, challenge you, tickle your mental and spiritual funny bone, maybe. We'll see. We're going to learn a lot more about him. Go visit him and his website, founder dailywayhome.com. That'll be very, very cool. And hello to everyone in the chat room. I see you here, and I'm winking at you. Thank you for joining us. So, Rief, tell me,
yes,
what did you want to be when you were a kid?
Oh, that's an awesome question. Now you're going to find another passion of mine. My grandfather was more of a role model and a mentor and a man that deeply affected my life than my father, who was absent. And my grandfather, when I was just a wee boy, six, maybe seven, he used to take me to the local airport in Durban, where I grew up, South Africa. And it was called Virginia Airport. And my grandfather was in the Second World War. And he'd sit me on his knee, and we'd watch these little airplanes take off. And he'd go, ah, it's a Second World War fighter pilot. There goes Johnny. And I just got completely enamored with flying. So eventually when I was about 19, 20, 21, I was backpacking in Australia, and I learned how to fly hang gliders. And it was just the most liberating, freeing thing. It was, in many ways, it was another coping mechanism, because just the adrenaline of throwing myself off a cliff and ridge soaring, you know, with the eagles, it completely took me out of my life and out of my, you know, out of my my body, because you're completely focused in the moment. You know, I mean, if you make a mistake, hang gliding, well, it's the end result's not so good. So I developed this passion for flying, and when I moved to Canada, I ended up getting my private pilot's license, and then 2 years later, I got my commercial pilot's license, and then I got my twin engine instrument rating, I got my float plane rating, and I just fell in love with flying. And you know, even in my definite major purpose, there's a segment that covers, you know, my flying, and I describe it as, when I fly, I touch the face of God. And so, yeah, you asked me what one of my passions are. It is flying. And eventually my big goal is to create a tropical retreat with a grass runway. And I'm going to have a couple of my own planes on that runway. Some of them will be fully aerobatic. And I want to eventually hold retreats on weekend workshops on my tropical retreat. And instead of a fear overcome, like walking on coals a la Tony Robbins, my clients are going to be buckled into my fully aerobatic airplane, and we're going to go up and do a fear overcome upside down, inside out, back to front. So,
well, you know, as attempting as that almost sounded, I'm going to pass, but if you need a housekeeper, let me know, because I'm all about tropical islands.
Awesome,
I'm in, I'm game.
Awesome, you know. Yeah, we've got to have, you know, got to have big dreams and goals and those that's, you know, I'm sharing with you that's certainly one of mine. So yeah, flying, I hope that answers the question. Flying is almost an equal passion, but my two passions are personal growth and flying. I believe that flying is for me personal growth. I mean, it's a spiritual experience when I fly. You know, and
so
you know what's cool? Carry on.
Okay. I was just going to pull you back a little bit into the cosmic 2x4 that hit you when you were about 40 years ago, where you were kind of so empty, spiritually,
yeah,
emotionally, mentally, physically empty. And I've
yeah,
been there, so I can completely relate. And I tell people all the time, when you're down, you know you're down, and the only way you have is, you know, the only choice you have at that point is to get up. You have no other choice. So talk to us a little bit about that cosmic 2x4. What was the trigger?
Wow. What was the trigger that got me there?
Yeah, what was the trigger? What was that final grand finale? I know for me, it was lying in a pool of blood and just going, you can take me now. You can really take me now because I'm done. I have no more energy. I've been beaten physically half to death, emotionally half to death. I'm done. And yet I still, in a few minutes, had this determination and this strength that came from the universe, it had to have, because I really was done, to get up and move forward.
Yeah.
And that is a very pivotal moment in people's lives when they really do hit that bottom. It doesn't mean that you're an alcoholic bottom or a drug addict bottom, but there is a bottom that we get to.
Yeah.
And we don't have a choice but to move forward. So what was that trigger point?
Well, yeah, you're talking about surrender point, and mine, you know, because I'm such an outgoing, you know, kind of energetic person, my surrender point was dramatic. I don't recommend having to go that low before you learn what you need to learn to sort of align with yourself. But mine came out of I was using alcohol to kind of distract me, but I think my sexuality was you know, to be honest, was the real pivotal one for me. And you know, I got very involved and distracted into the internet as an escape, as a fantasy, and it became, you know, deeper and deeper, and it just, you know, it became all consuming, and eventually things that I was hiding, denying around my behaviors and my acting out got brought out into the open with some really close friends that I've known all my lifetime. And I had broken trust. I had failed people that trusted me. And this was a part of me that I wanted to hide and deny at all costs. And it was, I don't want to go into the actual mechanics of it, but it was, you know, acting out inappropriately that was so dark and so deep for me that it was almost unbearable. And at that point, at that point, my life crashed and burned.
Right.
Because now everyone in my life knew what I was doing, and it was all out in the open. And people that I loved as well, I'd realized that I'd hurt. And it was just, I just felt like I just didn't want to be around anymore. I really, really didn't see a way out. And but somehow, you know, Rusty, I'd never experienced depression before. I got to be honest, I didn't even know what it was. I always used to think when
right.
people got that low, why don't they just go to India and become a monk or go to a meditation center? Or, you know,
because the answer is too expensive.
But honestly, that's how I used to think until I
yeah.
hit this surrender point, and I felt depression for the first time in my life, and I went, "Oh my God, if this is what depression feels like." I know why people don't want to experience it, and
right.
you know if it wasn't for a dear, dear sponsor that I had in one of my 12-step programs, who was just there for me. I mean, when I could hardly get from the telephone to my bed without collapsing in tears, and but he was someone who stood by me and believed in me, and it was just beautiful. I'll always love him for it. And one day he said to me something that really resonated. He said, "Rafe, get off the cross. We need the wood for the fire." And I just, you know, in the middle of all my sadness and despair, I started laughing
Good
my head off. And
I love that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so often we can get stuck in the victim of our story and the victim of the past.
Yeah.
And until we get over that hump and see that, you know, we can undo the story and that the story doesn't have to define us, and then we can go on this hero's journey. And I love Joseph Campbell's concept of the hero's journey, because no religion, no mentor, no coach, I'll even say that, can live your journey for you, can hit your surrender
exactly.
point. We can hold space, even a religion, even a mentor, even a religious leader, a coach, a therapist, they can hold space for us. But ultimately, Rusty, we have to go on that journey ourselves. We have to take that sword, we have to go into that dark forest, and we have to frickin' slay that dragon. And you know what the irony is? When we cut that dragon's head off and we go up to it and we kick it and we look at its face, we might be shocked that we look into the face that is similar to ours. And we'll realize in that moment that the demon that we've been running from is ourselves. It's not our story. Look, I'm not saying these things didn't happen to me as a child, but I'm saying that the meaning I gave to them and my perception was not based in reality. My father didn't purposely go out and want to hurt me. He didn't say, "I'm going to destroy my son's life." He was acting as a crippled human being himself. He was acting, trying to get his basic human needs met in inappropriate ways. But he didn't want to destroy me. So the perception of that story was not based in reality. And when I turned around that perception, I went, "Oh my God, you know, I can use this as an empowering meaning and not a disempowering meaning." And when I realized that, you know, the dragon I slayed was really me, then suddenly your whole life, you become responsible. Your life is your life. Your life is not driven by your story anymore. And it's a little scary, because guess what? Suddenly you are responsible for everything that happened, everything that is going to happen, and everything that did happen. But it's also very powerful, because you realize that, you know, you have the choice to move forward. You have the choice to create harmony within, and the result will be harmony without. You have the choice to create affluence within, and thus affluence will occur without. I mean, I it's an incredible concept to get that gain or financial success or abundance is really just accumulated consciousness. Think about that for a moment. So lack is the opposite. Lack is just scattered consciousness. So if we truly understand that the world within creates the world without, where would you put your focus? So that's why I do what I do. I ultimately, look, I have to be in the world, and I'm driven by being autonomous and having liberty and independence. My two personal pivotal needs are liberty and autonomy. And I have to exist in the external world as well, and be able to, you know, bring home the bacon. But I know that my journey is an internal journey. And I always, you know, when I'm starting to look outside of myself and want to create happiness outside of myself, that's when I struggle. And when I go back inwards and things flow from a, you know, from a spiritual perspective, that's when I have peace. So my life is a continual growth as well of trying to get those two to jive, you know, and trying to find the balance where my internal world can create my external world completely. And it's part of why I coach and write the daily blog. Hey, we best teach what we need to learn. You know, I'm not sitting here forever saying I'm some wise sage who's conquered, you know, all my issues and has all the answers. Anything but.
I love that. So I actually wrote my blog that I posted today is very much about that, because there's this notion or this preconceived ideology that when you're in this role, in the servitude helping role coach style, that we are somehow, some way infallible, or we're untouchable. We don't experience life. And what I love in reality is we do experience life, but we experience it better in the sense that we've been there, we've done that, we have better skills and coping mechanisms, and that's why we do what we do. We teach our story and we teach our skill set so that we can help you get through your life faster and better and hopefully without harm, right? But I love how you said that because we do go through stuff. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Absolutely, you know, and you know, I'll take that, you know, a step deeper for me is in our vulnerability lies our strength. It's the great dichotomy, especially as men, and from growing up in my era, we were told to, you know, as to be men, we had to hide our feelings and hide our vulnerability and pretend that we were strong. I think it's the exact opposite. I mean, in our vulnerability comes our strength. And if you cut yourself, there's a scar, right? But think about it. That scar is where the light shines through the brightest, because it's the skin is the thinnest. So, you know, in our wounds lies, you know, our greatest strength. And that's what I'm saying about turning my story around now. And it's still a story in progress, trust me. But, you know, I see now that, you know, through my challenges growing up and through all these challenges acting out of alignment with self is through my wounds and through my scars is where my true power really lies. And I do bring that to my coaching. I think I'm really sort of qualified now to be very intuitive with people's hurts, with the things that hold people back, with the wounds that we bear that are really not ours to bear, or the wounds that we allow to suffocate us when really they're not meant to suffocate us. You know, so much of the work I do all leads back to self-love. It's such a...
I think that is one of the things that we struggle with as a species. We've worked so hard at, and I know this is where the gender difference doesn't actually exist, because I grew up in the South, and you're seen, you're not heard, and if you cry, you get whooped. They will whip you for crying because you're not allowed to have emotion. So, you know, I'm learning to cry. I'm learning to feel like I don't have to hide in the bathroom when I'm upset, or, you know, I'm learning to accept and not be embarrassed by my own emotions. It's part of my journey. So it's not just a male thing, I think. I think it's a society thing. I think we genuinely have made it so difficult to be anything other than this mechanical producer that we've really taken away a lot of the human spirit. And I think with the work that you do and the work that I do and so many like us, we're trying to allow people to embrace that human side. And it can be uncomfortable for people, don't you think?
Oh, hugely. I mean, as I said, most people don't want to face the pain. I mean, it's a hero's journey, and it's called the hero's journey for a reason. I mean, you think of it. Most people go through their lives hurting themselves, their families, hurting people in business, and they really don't ever, you know, have the courage to change it. I mean, they kind of just project manage it their whole lives. So the hero's journey is, There's a reason why it's called the road less traveled. Anyone that I work with, I consider heroes. They're stepping out of their comfort zones. They're facing, you know, fear, guilt, anger, hurt feelings, unworthiness. And they've signed up to bust through those comfort zones so that they can find the gold on the other side. So, it's the road less traveled. It's not for
it
the
is.
Meek, that's for sure. You know, it's easier. Here's the irony. People think it's easier to stay in the pain of what they're going through, or the frustration, or the, you know, the feeling like they're never going to sing their song, that their song is going to be unsung in this lifetime. They feel that that is easier or less painful than the pain of going through what they need to do to make that change, to live authentically, to find their purpose, and to sing their song in this lifetime. But I don't think it is. I mean, I'm living testament that it is, that it doesn't work that way. Because, I mean, the pain that I went through was unbearable. And, there were times when I said, no human being should feel what I'm feeling. It's impossible. It's impossible that anyone can have these feelings and stay on Earth and survive. But I'm,
what's,
you know,
incredible about that statement is that it's clearly not impossible, because there's two of us here live that have definitely felt such a deep and incredible pain that you thought that your body was breaking in half and that the tears would never stop and the emptiness just echoed on the inside of you with all of the fears and the shaming thoughts and things that you were told all throughout your life. Two of us, I bet you there's 2 billion of us as well that have experienced such a deep pain that there are no words. And what's beautiful about that is that when we share our story with other people and we embrace and indulge in some sense the victories that we've had, then we're able to heal and help so many others. So we have about 2.5 minutes left for you to not only shamelessly promote yourself for the last time today, but also give us what you want 200,000 people to take away from today's show. What is the message?
Wow, gosh, okay. There's so many, but...
You thought this was going to be easy. Oh.
What I'd like to say is most people are unwilling to be heroes in their own lives. And as I say, they prefer to let things be. This is why so many people resign to lives of quiet desperation. And they don't, you know, have the courage to face their pain. Well, the irony is the pain overcome could be your destiny. And it could be the beginning of a journey into a self-directed life of great purpose, meaning, and service. So our job is to get clear on that, on the purpose for our existence. And then our only other job is to frickin' do it regardless. So I know that we were made first class by first class, and we deserve to travel first class. And here's the thing, whether you like it or not, you can never be separated. It's impossible from source, universe, higher power, God. Any less than a wave could be separated from an ocean. It's impossible that a wave could ever be separated from the ocean. And we are the wave of the universe. We're ever, forever connected. So if we feel separation, it's our doing. And it's often as a result of hereditary thoughts, past conditioning, you know, the lack of love we got from our parents growing up, story. So
we're going to have to have you on again, because we're almost out of time and the machine's hanging up on us. So where do we find you?
You can check out my daily blog. Please subscribe. You'll get my blog every day delivered to your email at 5 o'clock in the morning, Pacific Standard Time. I put my heart and soul into my blogs, and my promise is to give you more value than you expect. And you can find my blog at www.thedailywayhome.com. And if you have any questions about coaching, you can email me at info@thedailywayhome.com. And,
you, my friend, are a rock star. I am sending you all kinds of positive love and vibrations and hugs and kisses, and I'm just so pleased to have had you on the show, and I'm going to invite you back. So let's try to coordinate you coming on again, because we didn't even touch half of what you have to offer people, and it's beautiful. I think we could talk for hours, probably days.
Right,
so many hugs
I feel
to you.
Well, I feel the same way. And thank you so much for bringing me on. I love sharing space with you and your listeners. And I'd love to come back and talk to you again. It's been fun.
Very cool. Much love.
You too.
So we're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. I'm Rusty. Today is Humpty Hump Day, and I've got to hurry up. But know that I love you. You're beautiful. You are a blessing. Smile because it's contagious, and you might send out something viral to somebody else and make them smile too, and the world would be, a smiley kind of place. So don't forget to love, be in servitude, give somebody a hug or a high five, or, just pay for the coffee without them even knowing it was you. It's a joy to be a lover of the universe and a lover of each other. Until Sunday, I'll talk to you then.